Cox is the H-back behind right tackle. Johnson's going to fake the handoff and walk in around left end for the touchdown. Touchdown, Auburn. Jeremy Johnson and the Tigers lead 6-0. And they'll hand it off, and he dropped it. He never had it. The ball's picked up, running the other way at the midfield to the 40, 35, 30, 25, 20, down to the 10, to the 5. Gone! Justin Garrett, touchdown, Auburn!
Yeah, I just try to make a play and, threw the ball away, hit my check down.
Coach Lashley said that's not you out there, that you were pressing. Do you feel that one?
Yeah, I definitely feel that way. I know that's not me. You know, I know I could have performed way better. And that's just, just trying to take the big plays and instead of just, going through my progression and making the right reads.
I'm Weather Channel meteorologist Reynolds Wolf, and you are listening to Almost Credible Discussion of the 2015 College Football Playoff-bound Auburn Tigers with the AU Wishbone.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
War Eagle.
We welcome you to Jordan Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
It's the Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary. Now, here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Hello, and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we have actual, honest-to-goodness, all-American college football underway now. In fact, there's a game underway as we speak on the Thursday night game.
Amen.
It's good to be an American. It is.
I'm going to consume all of this at the same time because I am a free America.
And by all of this, I mean consume all the football.
That's what I did last Saturday, man. It was spectacular.
That's the thing for me. I always feel like I'm a step behind you and everybody else in the college football season because I'm off doing something sort of completely removed from that world on opening weekend every year. But this year was a little bit better because I actually got to go to the game.
You have the first person perspective.
I do, yeah, and it's different because I haven't had a chance to actually watch the game on television until about the last 20 minutes before we went on the air tonight. I've been able to watch about the first quarter of the game on TV and just get a little different perspective. Like, for example, I could really see what Carl Lawson was doing that everybody's been talking about. I've been hearing people talk about Carl Lawson, but when you're in the 300 level of the Georgia Dome, and if he's like at the other end of the field, it's hard to kind of tell exactly who's doing what, as opposed to watching on television where you can actually see the big 55, rolling over people. So I'm getting a better sense of what he was doing now than I had actually being there. But anyway, we have actual football going on. This is great. The season is at last underway after what seems like probably the longest buildup that I can ever remember. We were, every day was just counting down the minutes. So I think the question that you have posed, and I think is a good one, is how do you feel about things right now?
After we've had a game, you saw them, how do you feel? I mean, we went into the season with a lot of expectations. So after that game, are you feel good? Do you feel bad? Are you concerned? Are you confident? How do you feel?
Well, I mean, I look back to 2013. That team was a steamroller and came within a few seconds of winning the national championship. And it very nearly lost to the in its opening game to the team that lost to Portland State Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
So, Gus's teams have a tendency, with the notable exception of the November 1st on last year, have a tendency to start out a little bit slow and they build and build and build as they figure out what they do best and they get comfortable with what they do best. So I'm as concerned as anybody in their right mind would be, given that the offense struggled a bit. But it's about what I expected, honestly, because I didn't think we were going to go from an 8-5 team to looking like, you know, we're in late November form.
Yeah, you don't go from like last year's 8-5 team to 95 Nebraska.
Right, not overnight, or not just a, you know, not in an off season, but you do make big strides, and you do kind of head that way. And I think there's no doubt that we, you know, you look at the team that played Louisville, and you have a whole lot more hope for the future than you did looking at the team that, you know, went 0 for November and December and January last year.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, there's certainly room for improvement. I mean, we're going to talk about Jeremy Johnson particularly in just a minute. And there's the fact that if without, you know, you take a couple of players out of the defense and suddenly the defense gets a lot more average. And we can talk about that too. But overall, you feel pretty darn optimistic, don't you? Because I do.
I do. I do. I feel really good. I mean, again, Louisville's a good team.
Yes.
And they have a lot of players. You know, they're very good players. They're going to play in the NFL. They're going to win a bunch of games in the ACC this year. So, no, I felt like it was a good win. So.
The final score was not as close as I predicted it would be.
No. But it easily could have been 31-3 at one point, too. So.
Well, and then again, it could have, you know, Louisville won almost every statistical category, and it could have easily been 38-31, you know, or 45-31 the other way. So it was just one of those games where weird stuff happened. It's the first game of the season. Weird stuff happened. All right, so we'll go in and we're going to break all that down in individually over the next hour or so or thereabouts. But first, you know, we've got a few announcements. We're into our season schedule now, so theoretically we'll be doing a show pretty much every week. There may be weeks like this week where something happens and we're delayed a day or two. This week is pretty unique in that John was I was gone the entire weekend and didn't come back until Monday night. John, you were gone.
I was gone Monday night.
Monday night. And then, you know, after that, it just was we were still out of pocket until basically tonight, you know. So this is the best we could do. So but anyway, yeah, so I had a big Dragon Con weekend. It was fantastic. We had about between 75 and 85,000 people there at the convention. The parade had about 140,000 people lining the streets. I actually went to the parade for once and got to see a little bit of it. That was pretty neat. In all these years, I'd never actually gone to the parade. I usually have a panel or something going on Saturday morning, so I actually was able to do that. It was neat to see all the Auburn fans there intermixing with people. I saw a lot of Auburn people that I know through Twitter or otherwise there. Got to hang out with some of them, just got to say hello to some of them. You got to go to Virginia Tech.
I went to the Virginia Tech Ohio State game Monday night, and that was a lot of fun. It was a great, great atmosphere and a really fun game.
Yeah.
A beautiful day and a great game of football. So.
Well, it was neat for me to get to fly back home and then get home and walk in the door and turn on the TV and have a pretty good game on. At least it was good when I turned it on.
Well, I mean, it was good until the beginning of the third quarter when Tech's quarterback went out. At that point, it was pretty academic.
That's about when I turned it on. So we were driving home and I was asking the Twitterverse how the game was going, and they're like, "Oh, Virginia Tech's just taking the lead at halftime." And we walk in the door, and I turn the TV on, and Ohio State scored to go up 2 touchdowns. And I'm like, "Whip, that's so much for that." But pretty good atmosphere, huh? There at Blacksburg.
Oh, it was great atmosphere. I mean, I've been to a bunch of the ACC stadiums, and I think Virginia Tech fans would have been fine if we'd picked them to join the ACC. They would have fit in. They take it seriously.
Yeah,
you know they're loud when their team's on defense, and that was a great day because it was like 80 degrees and sunny, and it was a holiday, so everybody was off and people were tailgating, you know, like at 10 o'clock in the morning for an 8 p.m. kickoff.
Sounds like LSU.
And there was a lot of drinking going on, you know, around, but I never saw anybody get into a fight or even have bad words with each other. And there was a ton of Ohio State people on that campus.
So not like LSU. Okay.
No, not. It was more like Auburn or, you know, some other schools where the fans were very friendly, and it was great. And I got to see their, they do the big entrance where they come out and they play, Enter Sandman by Metallica, and they run onto the field, and that was really fun. And they used their Jumbotron really well. Before the team came out on the field, they show Frank Beamer on the Jumbotron, like while he's still in the locker room with the team.
Whoa.
And he says, like, this is our home, and like yells it into the camera. And then they start playing the music, and they come out on the field, and everybody in the stadium is jumping up and down. And they shoot off fireworks, and they have a real cannon too that the Corps cadet shoots off, and that thing was incredibly loud.
They needed to shoot it at Cardell Jones, apparently.
they needed it to bring him down. That's about right. All they could have done. And they got to see the Ohio State band play at halftime too, and they were
illegal use of 19th century artillery. That's a 150-yard penalty, and you may go to jail.
Well, I mean, now I know how teams playing against Cam felt because. You know, I was yelling at everybody else when Tech was on defense, and they could not bring Cardell Jones down. They had hands on him about five times and, never got a sack. Anyhow, that's enough about that other game.
Well, so let's get into the Louisville game. I guess the first thing we've got to look at in that game is Jeremy Johnson.
Yep.
And like I said, I haven't gotten to watch any of his interceptions yet on TV, but I was there live watching it happen, and we were all just sort of stunned. And, I mean, I'm curious what your reaction, what your impression of those interceptions was. Mine was that they were all when he was sort of like trying to make a big play downfield, it seems like. And here's what kept going through my mind, and I haven't heard anybody else say this week. They kept stressing in the off season over and over. I mean, they didn't make any secret about it. The coaches and Jeremy both kept talking all off season about how they planned to really use the deep ball to open up the running game. And it looked to me like Jeremy was just, by golly, going to do the deep ball no matter how dangerous it might be in any given moment. He just seemed to have made up his mind to go with the strategy rather than what was pragmatic at the moment. How do you see that?
I mean, I think in some sense you're right. I think on those particular pass plays, he had already decided – like the night before,
right?
For example, when he's going over the play, he's thinking when they call this, he had decided then this is where I'm going to throw the ball, and he knew where he wanted to go, and that he looked at the defense and saw what he thought he saw, and he had already decided where he was going to throw the ball. Enough, he didn't see the other teams. The players on the Louisville defense and change his decision.
Right.
And, he didn't go into it with, well, this is plan A, and this is plan B, and this is plan C. He went into it, this is where I'm going. And then he threw it. And when you go back and watch some of those interceptions on TV, you're going to want to beat your head against the wall because there's a couple of them are really, really dumb. And, I mean, the Louisville defender is clearly in front of the Auburn player, and you couldn't throw the ball unless you threw the ball like through them. You couldn't get it to the guy. So, and one of them, it was like into triple coverage. So, it was frustrating, and I know that he's smarter than that and better than that, but I really think it was a case of where he, wasn't reading the information and making a decision. Mm-hmm. He was just like pre-programmed, this is what I'm going to do. And maybe they run that play a million times in practice, and it never – didn't work for him going to that receiver on that route. Mm-hmm. But I think at several times it looks like Louisville kind of tricked him a little bit. Grantham did a good job where they look like they're playing man and they're not. They're playing zone, and the guy dropped back into the area where the route was going. None of them were things where it was like he was forcing the ball into a tight area or anything like that. He just threw it right to him.
Yeah.
So Jeremy just got to do better. I mean, and I think clearly he can. We saw him, we've seen him play, against a good defense in Arkansas last year. And we've seen him perform better than this. And I really think it was a case where he had kind of psyched himself up and already made up his mind before the plays of what he was going to do. And I think he's learned his lesson, and he'll be more relaxed next time and go into it and go, all right, that guy's covered. Let's go to plan B and get over here. Because, on most of them, he wasn't under any pressure either. So,
well, when he did really – well, now that brings up another point, but first let me say this. Most of the time when he came in and did a play or two for Nick in the past, he came in and did a really very high smoking fast intermediate range pass.
Mm-hmm.
He never just came in and chucked it like to Ricardo Lewis down the sideline or anything. He and in his two starts, I don't remember him just airing it out like that. It seemed like it was very much a lot of pace on an intermediate ball, and he's very accurate that way. So this just seemed totally against his character and his nature from the beginning. I wasn't exactly sure why he was making those choices and those passes, other than because that's what the coaching staff said all summer he was going to do.
And I don't think it was that's what the coaching staff told him to do. I think it was he made, that was option A on those plays, and he made up his mind that was he was going there no matter what.
Yeah, well, and the thing that bugged me too about it is before the game, I saw on the video a while ago, and then I saw after too, Petrino was as smug as he ever is, and there are few coaches more smug than Bobby Petrino, win or lose. And Petrino was saying, he's a young quarterback. They got a young quarterback. We got to get some pressure on him. And after the game, Petrino, they asked him about the interception. He said, well, you get pressure on a young quarterback, and that kind of thing happens. So I hate to prove Petrino right, I hate that it played into his hands that way.
I don't think that was it, really. I mean, I a couple of them, I don't think pressure had anything to do with it.
Yeah. He was kind of rolling out or running toward the sideline and trying to make something happen on at least a couple of them.
Yeah, he was. I mean, on one of them, he was rolling to the sideline, and one of them, he was throwing it really deep. And the other one, he didn't have anybody even near him, but, And there's a couple others that, should have been intercepted. So
our verdict, is he ever going to do this again, or is he going to be fine?
He might. I mean, he might be another day when he's like this, but I think it's a learning experience for him, and I think he's going to play better, and I'll be shocked if he has a game where he's throwing at the other team like this again.
I will too. I think he's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Next issue. Injuries. The injury bug just went crazy. I was freaking out up there in the stands. I mean, I knew that I got word that Rock got hurt. Okay. Mm-hmm. And we were all of us, there were several guys around me in my section. And we were all talking just constantly, just like we were, all old buddies. All of a sudden we bonded around watching this game. And we were talking about how, and by the way, I hope some of them are listening because I gave them out our cards that have our show information on them. Yeah, I had a few in my wallet. But we were following the injuries as best we could. Nobody really had a radio or anything. But we were watching Carl Lawson, right? Because you could see when he got hurt, it was pretty obvious, and he was limping around, and we were all just like, oh, here we go, unbelievable. And then word came pretty quickly that Rock Thomas had gotten hurt. And then, I said, well, wow, they sure are using Peyton Barber a lot. And somebody said, well, Javon Robinson got hurt too. And I'm like, Javon Robinson got hurt too? I didn't even know. Honestly, I didn't even know with the ebb and flow of the game. And as I've told you, the fact that during this game, not to go too far away from the game, but just real quick, as I was walking from the convention area, the hotels, the Hyatt Marriott area over to the Georgia Dome, my wife suddenly starts texting me that our basement is flooding and our sump pump was broken. And so I spent basically the first half of the game spending more time texting her about, avoiding our house flooding than I really was paying direct attention to the game. So
it's completely understandable.
Yeah, we were freaking out. So we got it taken care of. She got it taken care of amazingly. She did a great job. But I just happened to have an extra motor in a box down there, and her father-in-law came up and her stepfather came up and and switched them out and got it going. So we saved the house, thankfully, the basement. But what exactly – I haven't even heard yet. What exactly happened with Rock and especially with Jovan Robinson? How did the two of them get hurt and how close together was it and what else? I mean, I knew nothing about it.
I think it was on the same series, I think.
Yeah.
Pretty early in the game. Jovan Robinson, you know, I think he carried the ball like twice.
That's what I thought, yeah.
And, you know, he looked okay. I mean, he's a big guy.
Yeah.
You know, and Rock only carried it, what, six times? So, Jovan Robinson, I think it was an ankle. I mean, he was kind of going off looking like it was an ankle. And Rock, I think it was a knee maybe, but, you know.
That's the one that people were saying they had to x-ray him and stuff. That one sounded more serious.
Yeah, it sounds more serious, but I mean, they haven't said anything this week about it that I've seen. Have you?
No, the only player I've heard anything medical about in the last 2 days is they said that Carl Lawson was on crutches today. This is Thursday.
Well, Lawson's injury is a hip flexor.
Yeah.
Which basically, you know, like the ligaments in his hip. And so I think they're just trying to keep pressure off it. So, I mean, I think in the long run, he's going to be fine. They're probably, you know, the Muschamp had an article today. We're not holding anybody out against Jacksonville State or whatever, but we need to hold him out.
Well, I was just about to ask you, how many plays, if any, does Carl Lawson get in against Jacksonville State?
You know, if it was up to me, I'd say zero.
Right.
For any of these injured guys, but Muschamp had those articles. They were Muschamp's like, we're not holding anybody out. We got to, you know, they got to play. And so we'll see.
If they can't walk, we're putting them in a catapult and shooting them at the other team.
Well, I mean, if they're too hurt to play, but we're not, you know, resting guys who are healthy, whatever. So
let me tell you right now, Carl Lawson can crawl faster than most people can run. He'll be in the backfield on his fingertips.
That's upset. Carl Lawson crawling on the ground is better than most defensive ends standing up.
So. Carl Lawson stands on his hands and walks on his hands that way, and he sacks you with his feet.
That's it.
It's amazing.
So I mean.
Oh! I gotta say before I forget, I'm not making this up, and I actually saw it and I tweeted it. I looked down at one point, and Muschamp has his big whiteboard out. He draws something on it. He yells and screams at the players. He erases whatever he drew. He draws something else, and then he just starts beating with his fist on the whiteboard and nearly busts it in half.
Nice.
And I'm just watching this, just like wow. This, I mean, he's right back to his old ways, you know. He's still beating his white. I figure they must have like a whole crate of them off to the side, you know, and then they have like a big trash can full of broken whiteboards.
Well, while we're there, what did you think about the improvement of the defense?
Oh man, the first half was particularly. I mean, in the second half, they really couldn't. They couldn't stop that freshman quarterback running. But everybody knows that saw the game. But I mean, overall, I just thought they played with a lot of intensity. They were getting pressure. The defensive line was at its when the defensive line was at its best, it was really unstoppable. And the only reason Louisville was having offensive success in the first half was through plays that were very quick, like a two-step drop, slants, mm-hmm. and quick screens and stuff like that. You know, that's how you negate a fast, athletic defensive line is through slants and screens. That's how you know if you think back to the game where Clemson played us in the national championship year. All they ran the whole game was screens,
mm-hmm.
and just kept negating Fairley and the other guys' pressure. So that's the only way Louisville was happening. When Louisville did anything that wasn't fast, they lost yardage pretty much. When they ran any kind of the standard handoff or a sweep, we blew it up. The only time they were gaining yardage was on the quick slant and the screen, and that one drive they had that ended in the short missed field goal where they went about 70 yards, that was all in the first quarter. That was all just quick slant passes pretty much. They didn't get anything with the running backs on that drive.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, that's encouraging to me.
It is. I thought the defense played great in this game. I was – as somebody who likes, you know, defense and loves Auburn, I was very, very happy. I think it's clear they – you know, they did play with a lot more intensity. I think they were a lot more physical. Yeah. And it's funny, you know, people have said, like, Muschamp's thing is if you're not going to hit, you know, you're not going to be physical, you're not going to play.
Yeah.
And so there's some guys who were, you know, who didn't have a lot of contact last year and weren't that physical who were absolutely laying into people on Saturday.
Yeah.
And it was great to see. And I really, really, really feel good about the defense going forward. I think they're, you know, I thought they played really, like you said, when the, and that's what we should have done against that offensive line with the talent we have on defense. We're not going to be able to do that against everybody, but that defensive line is going to get pressure on a lot of teams. You know, when we play teams and it's third and long, we're going to get pressure on them. And I think overall the defense played very well. And again, you know, in this, yes, we gave a bunch of yards of stuff in the second half to this freshman quarterback, but that guy, when you go back and watch the whole game, that guy, many times we had pressure and he was running for his life and got away and got yards or completed a pass. Mm-hmm. And he had a little bit of like Michael Vick, Johnny Manziel thing going on in that game. I mean, he was absolutely eluding people and running away from defensive linemen and making stuff happen. And that was the only reason they were in the game. If they'd had a traditional Bobby Petrino drop back quarterback, we'd have sacked that guy 20 times.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah.
That was the choice that he made because that's the only thing they were going to do in that game that was going to keep him alive. And but I love the aggressiveness of the defense. I love how we were. And I know people had to appreciate this. So many years, our defensive backs have been like 10 or 15 yards off the receiver and given up the soft, you know, the catch in front of us that will tackle you thing and don't give up a big play. And our defensive backs were right up at people's face and being aggressive and not, you know, taking everything away from them, making them work for it. And that was great. It was very nice to see.
Yeah, and understand, too, this is a Bobby Petrino offense in his second year.
Yep.
This is, you know, this was a serious, I mean, you know, I just felt like people were really underestimating and undervaluing Louisville all the way through the summer and in the the build up to the game. That's why I had the game 31-27. I'm like, you know, Bobby Petrino's not going to roll over for anybody. We already know their defense is good and going to be really good. He's going to have the offense as good as it can be, you know, given his personnel and everything. I had no doubt they were going to give us a game. I had no doubt. I mean, and, you know, you can make a good argument the defense won the game for us in this game.
Absolutely.
They scored, and they gave our first 14 points came on a total of 26 offensive yards.
Mm-hmm.
26. Yeah, I said it looked like the 2006 team. Remember how we would beat teams like 14-3, and the 14 would be that we caused fumbles on their 20 twice and drove it in. You know, Brandon Cox handing off to Brad Lester or what's his name, the other great running back we had then. So that was all of our offense we had that year, and so that's what it reminded me of. What about Peyton Barber? I mean, I listened to our good friend of the show, Brandon Marcello's new show this morning, and he makes a long, well-argued, passionate argument that Peyton Barber should be the starting running back now. I'm not willing to go that far yet because Peyton Barber did what he did, it doesn't mean that Rock or Javon Robinson couldn't have done at least as well. I don't want to take anything away from Peyton Barber. Not taking anything away from Peyton Barber at all. I'm just saying that because of injury, you know, Barber got his chance to do that. But if it had been Barber and one of the others that got hurt, I think one of the others would have had 115 or more yards. So what do you think as far as Peyton Barber versus the other backs right now?
I mean, I think clearly he has to have a leg up because he did produce in the game and he did, you know, make plays. He did some pass blocking. He caught a pass and he ran tough, you know, especially in the second half. I thought he was strong. And I think he kind of fits the offense a little bit. Now, I agree with you. I mean, I think maybe Rock Thomas could make more big plays and maybe Robinson could do even more of the kind of stuff that Barber did because he's bigger. Maybe he could get an extra yard or two out of some of those runs. But, you know, could Robinson catch the ball? I don't have any idea. And could he block some, you know, a blitzer? I don't know. But
I'll just point out.
I know this. Like, yeah. I would be fine if, you know, 2 weeks from now we go to LSU and Barber is a running back. I mean, this team can be as successful as it can be with Barber running back. He's not going to be something that holds him back.
That's well put, I think. I think that we're still a three back team.
Sure.
I don't, And I would remind you, do you remember who the running back was? I mean, if you're going to say whoever gets 100 yards in the opening game is the back for the rest of the year, who would have been the running back for 2013, John? Do you remember?
Was it Cap?
Corey Grant. Corey Grant had 100 yards against Washington State. Cap had 100 yards against Arkansas State in game two. Trey had 100 yards in the third game. And so, you know, we had three different backs gain 100 yards in the first three games. So that could happen again this year. You know, this year it could be Javon Robinson comes in. In other words, you know, you could put Peyton Barber out there to start, and he could play like the first quarter and have like 70, you know, 80 yards in the first quarter against Jacksonville State maybe. And then they could say, all right, go take a break. We'll need you for LSU. Let's put Javon up there and see how his ankle's holding up. Mm-hmm. And Javon could end up doing the second and third quarter. Or you know, Rock Thomas, second and third quarter, and have 100 yards.
That's right.
And then the same thing could happen at LSU, you know, so with a different one. So I feel like we're in the same territory we were in 2013, and I just don't see why we need to be in such a hurry.
We don't. I mean, again, like, to me, like, we're going to find out we start playing SEC games who, you know.
Yeah.
So there's no rush to do it. Yeah. But, I mean, Barber did a great job.
Oh, yeah. No,
he
nothing
impressive.
Nothing against Barber at all. And if he ends up being the man, that's great. I'm all for it. I'm just saying it would have been Corey Grant at this point in 2013. So let's just kind of hold our horses a little bit.
That's right. That's a good point.
All right. Special teams. I thought they looked really good.
Yeah. I mean, again, like, Carlson looked great. Every kickoff was in the end zone. Yeah, they had, everyone was a touchback. They had no returns. They had a long field goal, like a 56-yarder. Punting was good, and it was better than last year. And we averaged 47 yards on our punts. Didn't really get a chance to return much.
Didn't drop any punts. Didn't have any punts blocked. That's what I always
right.
for.
That's right. That's the that's the baseline of competency. Really, right. I'm talking about good things, but
right.
I mean, overall, I thought special teams were strong. And I thought that I was very happy with them.
And the one thing we did on special teams that disappointed me, I understand why we didn't, and Gus addressed it a little bit, but we did not put a return man back on that 60-yard field goal.
I mean, we should have.
Well, and he said, you know, he said in the post game, they asked him about it, and he said, you know, something to the effect of that they talked about it very briefly. But they were more concerned about concerned about the fake or something, and they wanted like as many people as they could up around the line of scrimmage. And I get that. You didn't need, you know, because the odds that we actually run it back, I mean, it wasn't Alabama with their idiotic kicker and 10 offensive linemen business, so presumably. So I don't know if we would have – and we didn't have, you know, Chris Davis, but
holy cow! Oh, my God!
Yeah,
you're right. We didn't need it. And if you put a guy back there and then they fake it and get it because you only had 10 guys on the line of scrimmage, you're going to feel like an idiot.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So good special teams. A lot of freshmen played.
Yes.
A lot of freshmen in the secondary. Joshua Holsey didn't play much, though. What's going on? We got all these freshmen out there, but not our sort of dependable guy.
He's not like it? No, he supposedly has he tweaked his ankle or whatever, you know, and or knee is in practice.
Okay.
And, you know, didn't play a lot the last, you know, few practices. And so he's basically out until that, you know, he gets healthy enough to come back and play or whatever. So that was, you know, we need him over the course of the season. You know, we're going to need him.
Yeah.
But at the same time, this game was a good chance for a lot of young guys to play. And they did. A lot of young players played in this game. And I thought they played well.
Oh, Jason Smith had that beautiful catch in his first game that should have counted. You know who I'm really hoping that we get to see a good bit of maybe in the second half on Saturday?
Who?
Carry on, my wayward son.
That's who. Oh, I'm looking forward to seeing him involved. I believe he was in for one play and did the sweep and didn't do anything.
I think so.
Didn't touch the ball, I believe. So, yeah, I saw him come in because we were all joking. Hey, they're putting James Brooks in. See that big 21 out there? And you're like, hey, all right. Brooks has a little more eligibility left. That's cool.
I think everybody younger than us doesn't have any idea who that is.
Yeah, well, I barely
one of the great running backs in Norman history.
Yeah, we and we decreed that he is not the modern era, sadly. So he just misses it. But yeah, so
I want to talk about some of the young guys on defense. There was a lot of hype about some of these guys. Byron Cowart and Jeff Holland both played on the defensive line.
Yes, they did,
and made a bunch of plays. I mean, they didn't make a ton of sacks or tackles or anything, but they were, they got good game experience and they were upfield a lot. I mean, there were several plays. Holland in particular, he comes off the line of scrimmage like he was shot out of a cannon sometimes. Now, he runs right by the quarterback. he's going 100 miles an hour in that, point where the quarterback was. And so several times when he was in the game, he's the guy who flushed the quarterback out and then we didn't have any containment and the kid ended up running for 15 yards.
Right, exactly, so, yeah.
But I like it because Holland, he blew by the offensive tackle like he was standing still. I appreciated that. I was happy about it. And then – we play a lot of the young defensive backs. Tim Irvin started. He's still a true freshman. He was here in the spring, but he's a true freshman. He played a lot. He played the nickel. And then, we played the true freshman corners a lot as the game went on. We played Denson. Mm-hmm. And we played
go with a Davis because it's probably a Davis.
Right. We played the Davises.
Yeah.
Carlton Davis, really. And the one thing I want to say about that is if you go back and watch two of the Louisville touchdowns in the second half, they run a sweep basically to the corner, or they have a run play going to the corner of the end zone, the side, and the defensive back on that side was one of the true freshmen. Like they on one play it was Denson, on the other play it was Carlton Davis, and so on one of the plays absolutely I can't remember which one is which. One of the plays absolutely the freshman basically got caught inside and had at a bad angle and couldn't make the tackle and I guarantee him Muschamp screaming his head off about him and they're watching film later and that's something they won't do again. And on the other one the freshman did the same thing. And,
well, that's what Petrino does. That's Petrino's specialty. Is he? Tuberville used to talk about this somewhat admiringly and somewhat kind of puzzled. Right? Is he used to say that what Petrino was so good at, and Tuberville used to say it was because Petrino came from the NFL, and that's more of a thing they do in the NFL. Is in college they kind of scheme the overall formation generically, whereas in the pros they pick out specific players with specific issues and attack them in specific ways, man to man, individually.
And so, I think that's college has gone more that way a lot. And Spurrier does that a lot and stuff. He did
last year. But, absolutely.
But Petrino is really good at just seeing the formation, the players out there, the weakness, and going after him. You're right. He saw those guys on that corner. He said, "Run to that side," and it worked. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. Before we leave this game, a couple of things. The Louisville, what did you think about Louisville's new look for this game? What did you think about the giant radioactive evil green-eyed cardinal?
I thought their uniforms were the worst I've ever seen, probably. I'm a purist about this kind of stuff, but I thought their uniforms were terrible. In particular, I thought the font on the back of the jerseys.
Yeah, the Hindenburg font or whatever it looked like.
Was terrible, and I thought the number font was bad too. The whole thing, the color scheme and then the bird on the helmet and the number and the letter font and the number font together just combined to make it, for me, the worst uniform ever.
I still think those Georgia uniforms against Boise State are the worst I've ever seen, because just in terms of taking something so classic as Georgia's regular uniforms and turning them into something just horrifically ungodly.
That's fair.
But, my wife was texting me about fonts, and I didn't know what she was talking about, because with my glasses on in the deck at the dome, I couldn't see the names on – I couldn't even see those things on their jerseys, the names. When I was watching a while ago, I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's what you're talking about. She's like, yeah, it's so tight. Because she was saying, if you're going to go to a font like that, at least make it big enough that you can read it.
Mm-hmm.
That was just poor. I don't know what they were thinking. But anyway.
It was It's Adidas.
So, you know, Auburn, we're one of those handful of teams in the country that's extremely conservative and traditional with our look. And we kind of went out on a crazy radical limb for us and let Under Armour give us orange shoes and socks. So what do you think about that?
I thought it looked good. I mean, I'm a purist, but I thought it looked kind of sharp. I don't know if that's an every week thing or a one time thing, but
no, I think that we have orange shoes, blue shoes, and orange and blue shoes, and those were the orange shoes.
Okay. No, but I thought it looked cool.
I thought that was a much more radical change than the orange drop shadows back in the '90s.
Yes, it is.
And so if people had problems with the orange drop shadows, I can't imagine what they must have thought of the orange shoes.
I think the TVs now, they're so good, HD and everything. You can really see it. But I thought the color really stood out. I thought it looked kind of sharp. But it is bright.
Well, I'm all for doing something. I mean, we've got one of those companies that likes to do radical, crazy, colorful things as our uniform supplier. And then we tell them, don't do anything. And I'm like, you know, just against Jacksonville State would be the perfect time to mix in an orange jersey.
Well, good gosh, you bite your tongue. Oh,
Jacksonville State. My gosh.
We also had the center stripe on the helmet was like a metallic.
Yeah, I saw we got some chrome looking things going. That's good. See, I like that. I mean, I don't want us coming out looking like freaking Power Rangers like Georgia, but just do something. I mean, if you're going to have Under Armour, I don't want to be Maryland, and I don't want to be Oregon, but I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, mix it up a little bit for crying out loud. But I know I do think that white shoes.
Van, we do mix it up. We have a road uniform and a home uniform. Okay.
And occasionally we put Auburn on it there in the chest, but in really tiny letters, as if to say that we don't really, you know, we feel like we probably ought to put this word on there, but we're embarrassed that we should have to, and so we'll just put it kind of small.
That's more like as we run over you, you can read it. Remember who it was?
Barely read it. Yeah, okay,
that's right. As we smash into your face mask,
as long as it's not as big as like the Sooners on Oklahoma's jersey or State used to be on Mississippi State or whatever. Because that's just awful. There's just no reason we should ever have to do that.
That's an 80s thing.
That's admitting that nobody knows who you are unless you label yourself. And everybody knows who we are, so there's no point. Well, anyway, all right, in our time remaining, Jacksonville State coming up. I keep reminding people that this is a legit team. I know they're 1AA. Everybody's just laughing them off. Everybody's acting like we're playing the school for the blind and the poor and whatever, but – you know, this was a team went 10-2 last year. They've got 10 all-conference players. They put up 510 yards of offense per game last year. They've got a lot of seniors in the mix on offense. Some good running backs. They've got an all-conference quarterback, passed for 2,000 yards last year and ran for 700. They've got Devontae Sigler, defensive player of the year in their conference. I believe it was an Auburn transfer, right?
Yep.
And, I mean, they're not horrible. I realize that this is the Ohio Valley Conference, and so I didn't realize that Central Alabama was in the Ohio Valley, but okay. it's the Coosa Valley Conference.
I was gonna say, it's that new geography.
Yeah. So, but anyway, I mean, I'm not trying to say they're anything more than what they are. I really am not. I'm just saying, let's don't act like they're a junior high school because they're, you know, Gus has been saying all week, we're preparing for Jacksonville State. We are concerned about Jacksonville State. My reaction to that is good. Good, because I don't want to pull a Nick Saban and lose to some crap, you know, little team.
Well, I think the big thing is, are they a 1AA team? Yes. But they're a very competent, well-coached 1AA team with good players. And I think – you know, if you put them up against a lot of the lesser teams in Division I, they'd beat them. I mean, I think they'd probably beat Vanderbilt tomorrow. They'd beat, you know, Indiana tomorrow, and they'd beat, you know, Kansas badly and all that kind of stuff. So
they'd maul Kansas.
So, I mean, if we go in there and sleepwalk and play a crappy game, you know, then they're going to beat us. So we just got to go out and play a good game. And the biggest thing between Division I teams, 1AA teams, is they have a lot less depth.
The depth, right.
So as the game goes along, you know, we ought to be wearing them down on both lines of scrimmage and pulling away.
Well, but see,
that's
the thing
what
is,
ought to happen.
I think we're going to limit our own depth, though, because I don't think we're going to use a lot of our starters very much. I mean, it may very well be that Carl Lawson comes out and plays a couple of snaps, but I don't see him out much more than that. It may be that the two dinged up running backs play, but I don't see him playing more than a quarter. I said on Twitter earlier this week, I could see Peyton Barber going over 200 yards in this game, and that's just because who else is going to be, you know, completely healthy to carry it?
Your man, Carry On, I think he's going to get 20 carries in this game.
Carry on, my wayward son.
Just never, it's going to never get old. All right. Well, so you're going to rest. You're going to, you think we can still wear them down even with our top players that are dinged up?
For me, it's all about what do we got to do to win every game on the schedule? And we need, you know, Lawson and Matthews and those guys healthy. So if there's any chance that, you know, resting them now would help them get more of 100% for LSU, then I'd rest them because we can beat these guys without them.
I said 48-17 is my prediction.
I think that's perfectly reasonable.
How many touchdowns and how many interceptions for Jeremy?
I think, you know, he doesn't play more than a half or a little more than a half, maybe a series in the second half. So I'll say 3 touchdowns and no picks.
I like it. I can live with that. I think Sean White gets a couple of touchdowns,
yep,
too.
Yep.
That'll be good. Okay, so overall then, looking ahead, how are you feeling about the team right now?
I mean, again, you got to worry a little bit about Jeremy, but I feel really good because I think the defense looked great. I mean, I think the defense looks strong, and I feel pretty confident about that. So.
Yeah, I feel good going forward. I think that the passing game will get ironed out. I think if Jeremy just does nothing more than just check down,
that's right,
then it'll all be fine. Cause
that's right.
We got
talented receivers.
Exactly.
Get him the ball.
We got
get him the ball in space.
Oh, yeah. We got guys all around that are going to make a play for you. Just let them have the ball. Don't keep trying to chuck it to Ricardo. Because it's funny that both of the deflection DBs were in this game. They're also –
There was three of them.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And also you had three former Auburn coordinators in this game. You had three people coaching who had at one point been a coordinator at Auburn, right? You had Gus, Petrino, and Muschamp.
That's weird.
All had former Auburn coordinators. So, okay, let's look around the SEC a little bit. I didn't get to see any of this game, and I really wanted to. I'm hoping it pops up on YouTube so I can watch it one night in the middle of the night or something. But I didn't get to see any of Texas A&M Arizona State. Did you see any of that game?
I watched a good bit of it. I watched more of it than I did the Alabama game.
All right, what was your I don't give a crap about Arizona State. What was your impression of the Aggies, and should I be concerned, or was it all Arizona State?
You should be concerned.
Oh boy.
Their defense was much better. It wasn't great, but Arizona State is a good offensive team, and they really held them down. Miles Garrett was in the backfield every single snap of the ball, and one of their other defensive linemen was too, the other defensive end. They were in the backfield every play. It was like, you know, we had a Lawson and an almost good as Lawson, and then they played the whole game.
So is Chavis just a sorcerer, or did they have the players and they just weren't doing anything before?
No, I mean, again, like some of it is they brought in a couple other guys. They got some junior college guys that are coming in at different other positions, and they, one of their running backs moved to DB and that kind of thing. But
okay.
So some of it is Chavis, and some of it is like a little bit of the thing with Miles Garrett is kind of like the thing with Montrevious Adams, getting him to play at his full potential every snap.
Right.
Is part of the thing, and he did that in this game, and he absolutely was annihilating them. The other part is, again, like their offense is going to be good. They're creating their own quarterback controversy. They got this true freshman quarterback named Kyler Murray.
Right.
Who was like the new Johnny Manziel, basically. And Arizona State was basically bringing everybody to the line of scrimmage and doing all this really aggressive kind of overly aggressive stuff, and they basically put him in there, and he started running around and making huge plays because, you know, Arizona State was being super aggressive, and then Arizona State had to back off, and then they put the other quarterback back in, and he was throwing touchdown passes again. And they have a true freshman receiver named Christian Kirk, who is excellent. I mean, yeah, I was having Mike Evans flashbacks a little bit.
Oh, great. That's not
I mean, he broke one run, you know, about a 75-yard touchdown where he made half the Arizona State defense miss. So they're good. They're good. They're a good team. So, some of it was Arizona State, you know, some of the stuff they did on both sides of the ball I didn't love, but Texas A&M's a good team. And that was again, Arizona State is – they may win the Pac-12 South. So that's a quality win for Texas A&M.
It doesn't sound like they're going to have much competition from Arizona. They look terrible. Pac-12 had a bad weekend.
They did, but UCLA is pretty good. They're in the South, so.
Tennessee struggled with Bowling Green. I was hearing horror stories.
It was 59-30. They scored a gazillion points, but they allowed 30 to a MAC team, and they should be concerned about that with Oklahoma coming in.
Well, they were pretty close for a while. They
were. It was like a touchdown. It was a touchdown, you know, or so most 10 points, most of the game. And so.
I ran our theory past Barrett Salee the other day, the idea that Tennessee could be 3-4 after 7 games and still end up 8-4, and he said it absolutely could happen.
Yeah.
He agreed, so.
Did you see any of the Alabama game?
No, I didn't see a whit of it. What should I take away from it?
I mean, nothing. It was exactly what we thought. I mean, Wisconsin could do one thing, and that's really run the ball. And Alabama's front seven is really good, and they ran it right into him. And their running back got hurt. And then they ended up, you know, throwing the ball a lot, and they were throwing the ball all over the place against Alabama. And this was, you know, the mediocre quarterback that played against us in the bowl game. So, Alabama ran a lot of spread, hurry up kind of offense stuff, and Derrick Henry looked great. But you kind of knew that was coming. So, Coker's the quarterback, and he was fine, but they don't have a receiver like Cooper right now. So,
I go ahead and make this my,
Factoid of the week.
That it came out this week that Lane Kiffin did not want to do the hurry up, and it was Nick Saban that sort of forced him to go hurry up pacing offense. I thought that was a very interesting little thing that came out, that it was actually Saban, and because people have been having a field day with that, saying, you know, that's very unsafe, Nick. You know, why would you endanger your players that way? But he did, and made them start using these boards like we use, like we swipe from Oregon. They swipe from us now. I'm actually looking at my soundboard here, John, because there it is. Okay, we do have it. Okay. So we can look ahead, and I've actually got the sound effect ready, so that's good. We haven't used it in a long time, and I forgot where it was. You'll see what I mean.
All right.
Okay.
Nothing else exciting. I mean, North Carolina beat South Carolina Thursday night.
No, you got it backwards.
South Carolina beat North Carolina.
That's right. You got your Carolina upside down.
Anyhow, it was a really poorly played game, and Spurrier pulled it out and beat Chizik.
Yeah.
Vanderbilt lost to Western Kentucky. You know, they played good defense, but they looked terrible on offense. Georgia beat Louisiana Monroe, and you know, Nick
about
Chubb.
About what we thought, right? The Nick Chubb.
Yeah. Nothing exciting there. Ole Miss.
How did Ole Miss get 76 points? Are the Warhawk Eagles that bad?
Ole Miss is really, really good, and the Chad Kelly had a great day, and they ran the ball all over him. And had a bunch of big explosive plays, and their defense didn't let UT Martin do anything. So
poor Warhawk Eagles. Arkansas won,
Missouri won, Florida won. They all play kind of cupcakey teams. Mississippi State beat Southern Miss, but it was at Southern Miss in Hattiesburg, and they played kind of poorly. So we'll see this weekend. And LSU didn't get to play because they had the storms canceled.
It's getting where like every Labor Day weekend, every opening weekend, there's at least one game canceled because of lightning. Last year it was Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And this year is LSU. How weird is that? So we still don't know anything about LSU.
Nope.
We got to play them in like
– we'll find out this weekend.
We got to play them in like 9 days, and the only thing we're going to know about them is what we see against Mississippi State.
That'll be plenty.
That makes me a little nervous, though.
That'll be plenty.
All right. You want to look at, you want to do some upcoming.
Yeah.
Now, if I were to do a lock to bring that back, it needs to be a game worth locking up, right? And so,
well, let's be clear. There's only good games this week are Oklahoma at Tennessee,
right,
and LSU Mississippi State. I mean, Kentucky and South Carolina play too, but we don't really care. The rest of them.
There's also the out of conference. There's Oregon at Michigan State.
Well, I'm talking about SEC
games. I understand that, but that's a big game. I've already been tweeting that my plan for Saturday is this. Sleep in, 11 o'clock Auburn-Jacksonville State, over by 2:30, right, if not 2. Pat Dye would have the clock rolling the whole second half and game be over by 1:30. Do all my chores at 2:30, start cooking the chicken nuggets. I have a variety of flavors of chicken nuggets in the freezer in the basement. I'm going to roll those upstairs and start cooking the french fries. And then at 5 o'clock, I believe, we have, is that Oregon-Michigan State at 5 o'clock? And then at 7 o'clock we have.
You're talking about Central Time.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's those three games. There's the Oregon, Michigan State, and then Oklahoma, Tennessee, and LSU, Mississippi State, I think, is the late game. At like 8:50.
Yeah, Oklahoma, Tennessee is the first one, and that's at 6 Eastern, 5 Central.
Right.
And then Oregon, Michigan State's at 8 Eastern, 7 Central. And then LSU, Mississippi State is 9:15. 8:15. Eastern, 8:15 Central. So
yeah, those are what I'm concerned about this week.
Yeah, that's the only thing worth watching.
So when I look at what's coming up, we got there's other, you know, the rest of it's not. You're pointing out what's the CBS game?
Georgia at Vandy.
Oh my god! That's ugly.
When was the last time CBS was at Vandy? It had to be when James Franklin was there. I don't know.
They're going to be. Oh man, I hate when this happens. I hate when I have something at my fingertips and I can't,
Okay.
I don't have it. I don't have it. Dang it.
All right. Oklahoma or Tennessee, who's going to win?
Oklahoma, but it's going to be close.
All right. I'm with you. Oklahoma's going to be close. None of the other SEC teams are going to lose out of conference.
No, Arkansas State's not what they were under Freeze and Malzahn. So they could, you know, the old Arkansas State a couple of years ago could have given Missouri a game, but they're not going to give Missouri a game.
No, but they're not. And then, I mean, LSU at Mississippi State, how do you feel about that? You don't know anything about LSU.
I don't know anything about them. I don't know much about Mississippi State. I'm afraid to get anywhere near that. I'm going to be watching that just like it's a slow motion car wreck, and I'm just fascinatingly staring at it.
Well, we're going to learn a lot about both teams because we've got to play in both.
Absolutely,
in the next
weeks, absolutely. So. But what I am going to do is when we get to Kentucky at South Carolina,
my cold dead hands.
Oh, it feels good to be able to push that button again, doesn't it? It's been months since I got to push that button. I hadn't been able to push that button, but now I can push that button, and I'm going to lock up Kentucky.
At South Carolina.
At the chicken coop. I'm taking the Mildcats on the road in the chicken coop. They're going to be doing like me, fine dining on some chicken on Saturday at night or whenever they're playing that game. Honestly, that should have been the CBS game. I know they just want to go and get, you know, 3 hours of Nick Chubb, but
that's on the SEC network at 7:30 Eastern, 6:30.
You know who they're really wanting to feature on that CBS game?
It's going to be the Nick Chubb Heisman.
Oh, but you know who else on that Georgia team they're really wanting to focus on?
Oh, Grayson Lambert.
You lied to me. Release the hounds.
I'm going to use this as much as I can this year. Oh, it's good stuff. Good stuff. East Carolina at Florida. Do the Gators have any chance against the mighty Pirates?
Florida's going to be good. I mean, they're going to win this game.
It's awfully close to talk like a pirate day. I don't know.
Nah, Florida will be fine this game.
Florida will be fine. All right. Do we have any listener questions?
Oh, wow. We do have listener questions. I was like, all right, we're done.
Time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone Podcast.
All right, let's blow through a few and wrap this sucker up.
All right. First question.
Did you get Auburn Elvis's question?
I did not. I thought you got it.
Oh, my God!
We're going to hear from Auburn Elvis this week.
All right. I'm going to ask a question, and I'll log in and get it. You keep going. Okay. The first question is comes from Chris Mitchell, who says
yes.
So the team's thrown in a triple coverage regularly, and our defense is a wet paper bag. Is this 2012? Oh, my God, I'm having a flashback. And then he says, I'm being dramatic, but the narrative of this year is in my head and that we're solid and good. He says, I'm a little concerned I was wrong.
No. Everybody calm down. Everybody take a breath. And while John is looking up that answer, I got to say – The hosts of another show on our network, a Johnny Come Lately show on our network, they did a draft of each of them drafted three Auburn Twitter personalities. None of them drafted me.
I'm not worried about it. All right, I got his question.
Oh, my God!
I'm tore up.
You'll get over it. Your ego needs a Band-Aid now. All right, Auburn Elvis's question is, should Gus Malzahn be in the hot seat for not putting a defender back with 1 second remaining in the first half to return what turned out to be a short Louisville field goal attempt?
Yes, absolutely. I was furious about that. No, I know. We talked about it, and I get why he didn't do it. But it's still disappointing.
But it's great that he said Gus be in the hot seat for it.
Yeah, I wanted to say, everybody in the stadium was thinking the same thing, right? We were all thinking that. Everybody watching on TV had to be thinking that. Absolutely, we were thinking that.
All right. Adam Knoll says, do you buy what Malzahn said about JJ's INTs being because he was too greedy? First and third seem to be bad throws directly to the defense. I don't think it was greed. I mean, I don't think it was him trying to make a play that, you know, where he had a safer play. I think he just, it was like, this is where I'm going no matter what. As soon as the ball snapped, I'm going there. And he went there.
Yeah. So I'll defer to that. I don't have any better understanding of it. I haven't gotten to see it on any of the interceptions on TV
yet. Well, let me say this. If you have a few minutes on the AL.com page, Cole Kubelik does a little 4-minute video where he talks about some stuff in the game. And he breaks one of them, Dan, where he shows you what Jeremy saw and then the throw, and I think it's pretty good. I think it helps. Our next question comes from this. Are you still hearing everything?
Yeah.
This guy named Van Plexico, who says, is it time for J.K. Ringer to admit that I've been right along about Stanford and David Shaw?
Yes, I was waiting to hear the answer to that question. I just didn't know it would be on the air. Will you finally admit that I have been right the last 2 or 3 years when I've said that David Shaw is overrated and will be fired within 3 years?
You may be right, because I got to – the biggest thing is it's not that he's overrated. It's not that he's not a good coach, because he is. He is so conservative in play calling and going for it. He makes Brett Bielema and Nick Saban look really progressive. He's, you know, I mean, he is the most conservative football coach I have.
He makes Nick Saban look like Bernie Sanders.
Yes, he does. That's unbelievable. Like they get stopped and they're like the, you know, it's like fourth and one and they're at the other team's 30-yard line and they punt. It's unbelievable. Yeah. So anyhow, that
he's never impressed me not 1 second. As soon as Harbaugh left, I said, let's see what he's got. And within 2 games, I'm like, nah, this guy is not the answer. So
well, but I mean, that I would say is the two coordinators that were there too, and they were really good. Even after Harbaugh left, when he had the really good year,
yeah.
You know, one of them is a Vanderbilt's head coach, and the other is, you know, an offensive coordinator in the NFL. So,
yep.
I think that's hurt him. All right. Teddy Min says, "WTF, Jeremy?"
Yeah, that says it all.
Kind of answered that one. The next question comes from Emily Rios, who says, JJ's shaky performance aside, what are the biggest problem areas, defensive depth maybe, and best surprises from the first game? So what do you think is the biggest problem area other than Jeremy Johnson coming out of that game? The
biggest problem area is penalties by the offensive line. We just did not need to start the season already looking like we don't know how we're even going to line up and block. That was what bothered me. What about you?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, we have an experienced offensive line. They haven't played together a lot, but they're experienced. And
right.
But I would say this. I mean, Louisville's got some guys in the front seven that are going to play in the NFL. But that, you know, a lot of the SEC teams we played do. So
that's true.
Maybe the drop off when Lawson came out of the game.
Yeah.
You know, and depth. We played a lot of younger guys, and hopefully they'll learn from this and play better next time. On the surprise side, Petway and Chandler Cox were okay. They weren't great, but they were okay.
I think that we were just so expecting everything to be so good that the bad things shocked us, and there really wasn't anything that was way better than we thought it would be.
That's fair.
So
that's a fair question. All right. All Auburn All Blue says, he says, this is a tough question. He says, statistically, how do injuries, with basically loss of playing time, correlate compared to the current and the previous strength and conditioning coaches? Like, are guys getting hurt less often now that we have Ryan Russell as a strength coach versus the Yoxall? And I don't know if it's so much that or versus the medical staff and stuff. I don't have any sense. I haven't seen anything about missed time or whatever to say that more guys are getting hurt now and missing time. It seems like fewer guys are, but then we have, we have the serious injuries too. Like we had, two starters miss all of last season. So, I don't have a good sense of that. If anybody else does, and you certainly, especially if you know a way to, to do some kind of calculation on it, I'd love to hear about it. But
yeah, no, I have no idea. Everything I've always heard is the guy we have now is really good. So
he's excellent. I don't have any complaints about him. So
there you go.
Nick M asks, is this week's episode called back because of holding?
Yeah, I was holding on to Atlanta too long and didn't want to come home. So
that's
about it. Yeah,
that's all.
God, that was a great trip, man. I'm telling you, if you're into any kind of pop culture stuff at all, head down to Dragon Con. I mean, it's funny, when I first started going 21 years ago, God help me, it was two hotels and about 15,000-20,000 people. We thought that was huge. Now it's five major hotels and the merchandise mart, and it's about 70,000 people, give or take. It's just unbelievable. I mean, it's just so much fun, so much stuff going on all the time, day and night. It's like shifts too, right? I was leaving and people were coming in, and I'm like, yeah, the panel people leave and the party people arrive. Dragon Con After Dark is about to start. All right. Well, have we learned anything of significance tonight, John?
I think we've learned how we feel about David Shaw.
Yeah. We like the orange shoes.
Yeah. And you're pro in terms of shaking it up occasionally on the uniform front.
Yeah.
Other than that, no.
Yeah. I think we need Carl Lawson to not be on crutches.
When we play LSU, we play Mississippi State, we got to have him 100%.
Well, that's when we need all hands on deck. I appreciate, that Gus was saying, we're going to have we're going to have all hands on deck against Jacksonville State. We're not worried about any teams coming up LSU. We're going to have all hands on deck against Jacksonville State. I appreciate that, but we need LSU. That's the game we need everybody to be healthy for. That could be very much an indication of how things go for the entire season.
Yeah, and I'm going to be watching that LSU Mississippi State game with a microscope. So,
although, yeah, me too. Although what I have learned tonight is that I should be very concerned about Texas A&M.
You should be. They were good.
Even though our screen's bigger than theirs. So we got that going for
it. Let me say one more thing about the screen.
Oh yeah, Monstertron jump.
I'm excited about that. I think we're going to hear a bunch of stories about that. I mean, its influence on the game and with distracting the other team's players and going that way and
the electromagnetic field radiating
and the wind blowing around and messes the kickers.
Oh yeah, it'd be great.
But I got to tell you, I went to the Virginia Tech Ohio State game and they have a big screen. It's not as big as our gigantic jumbo screen, Mothratron screen, but it's pretty big. And one of the things they do is they don't take themselves so seriously. Okay, in the middle of the game, they played a video, And it was Frank Beamer and his son Shane, who's also one of the coaches on the staff. And they were playing Name That Tune. This is like pre-recorded during the week. And they had headsets on, and they would play like a pop song or rap song or country song. And they were trying to name it. And, of course, they were awful at it. I mean, they were embarrassingly bad. And they didn't get it until the song had been playing about 5 minutes and they got to the chorus or whatever. And it was hilarious. And I wondered, would any SEC coach go on the screen during a game and make a fool of themselves like that? No. No way. Can you imagine? Can you imagine Nick Saban playing Name That Tune on the Jumbotron during a game and being silly? I think people would faint, fall out of the stadium.
I could see. The only thing I could see is him like being like Donald Trump on The Apprentice or whatever. I could see him like actually cutting players live on the screen, you know, in the locker room before the game.
You're fired.
You know, and then sending them off. But not being funny, no.
So. No, that's what I'm saying. Like, they don't take themselves too seriously, and I appreciated that. So.
Well, that's cool. That's cool. Someday I get up there and see one. Yeah. You have a youngin' up there, right?
I do.
So you had a good reason to be there. Absolutely. That's awesome. Okay. Well, I think that's going to do it for us tonight. We went to about an hour and 10 minutes, which is probably what our about average of what our shows will run during the season. We had a lot to kind of catch up on. So next week, we will look back at the epic struggle with Jacksonville State. And far more importantly, John, next week, we're going to preview LSU in depth, down and dirty with actual game footage behind us.
That's the plan.
All right, our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.